A very warm welcome to this World Game Changers podcast, where your host, Paul D. Lowe, embraces many crucial conversations that compassionately contribute towards creating a better life and world. Paul's intention is very simple, to help get people's inspirational insights and motivational messages out into the world so others may benefit.
Hello, listeners, and welcome to this World Game Changers podcast episode. I can say now that I'm joined by a returning guest because on the previous episode, there was a lady called Nicole Bellal from the East Coast of United States of America. Nicole, very warm welcome back.
Great to be back, Paul. Thanks for having me again.
You may recall, listeners, on the first episode, with Nicole, we spoke about challenging conventional thinking. And towards the end of that, the topic started to get nicely warmed up around relationships and, more interestingly, monogamous relationships. Maybe a good starting point, Nicole, is for you to kind of, you know, bring forward, sort of recap where you finished that first episode off, because I think this lays the ground for a fascinating conversation. And I shared with Nicole off air that, you know, when we spoke privately about this topic, it jarred something within me. So hang on to your hats, listeners, and Nicole, over to you.
Thanks, Paul. So yeah, where we left off last time, we were getting into some juicy territory here, and so I'm excited to see where this goes. I am someone who really bought in to monogamy for most of my life, at least through 28 years old. And I found myself I was engaged, about to get married to, you know, to the wrong person. I learned that after a couple years in, and we called off the wedding. But that experience really led me, as I typically do, to question everything. And to question, is this what I want? Is this going to work for me? Can I make a commitment to someone for a lifetime and still be in full integrity? Or because of the ever-evolving nature of ourselves, am I going to be a different person in 5 years, in 10 years? Am I going to have different needs? Am I going to have different curiosities? And that really led to an exploration in open relationship, in polyamory. And so I've been playing in those spaces to see what is my ideal version of relationship. And I've certainly found myself in some hard situations that also didn't work. And I now find myself in a monogamous relationship. So it's sort of come full circle. But we also, my partner now, who I live with and who I very much want to have children with and really build a strong foundation with for life, and we actually are business partners as well, so there's a lot of overlap here, but we believe that at some point we'll also open up the relationship again and have some version of non-monogamy that will work for us. So it's an interesting arc. There's been many cycles of learning within this vast topic. And I'm really happy to go wherever you might want to take it, Paul, because I've been questioning all angles of this for a long time and questioning what works and why I have the beliefs that I have, where the values that I had, where did they come from in the first place? Are they values that I want to keep? Are they values that I want to change? So it's quite a vast topic that we've opened up here.
Yeah, fascinating. When we first spoke about this, Nicole, 2 or 3 weeks ago off air, as I've said, it jarred something within me. It triggered something within me. And it's interesting how you dance with an energy. And I think my initial, for a first few seconds, was one of shock, because it didn't fit the energy that was coming back to me somehow. And that's obviously my own internal kind of conditioning that, you know, kind of landed at that point. But I can remember feeling quite, ouch. ouch. And then, you know, and when I have these things, it's, you know, usually for just for a few seconds, because I was mindful that there was a conditioning there and there was a judgment there. But that ain't right. That ain't right, because that affronted my value system of loyalty. Mm. I mean, when I look at my own five values of life, learning, loving, legacy, and loyalty, you know, the last one was challenged significantly. So I've spent quite a bit of time sort of digging around on that. What was it that triggered me in that shock? And I'd got no right to be shocked at all with anyone, because, you know, people live their lives and we're all on this voyage of exploration and self-discovery. And believe me, I've been no saint in my time either. You know, whether it's been through whatever experience, sometimes just raw, brutal survival. So there was this whole thing of, okay. And then when I started to think about it deeper, the loyalty to thine own self be true, you know, that relationship with self that we spoke about in the first episode, to thine own self be true. Okay. Well, that's part of the value of this loyalty. And we'll all have our own subjective experiences that shape that, of course. But then to think about the intimacy of, you know, could I ever accept, from my lens that I'm wearing at the moment, the thought of that intimacy being diluted with a third party? And I couldn't even begin to get my head around it. And I've not shifted from that perspective. So this topic fascinates me, because that, just because that's my thoughts and my views and my experience and conditioning to a certain degree and values and whatever else you want to throw in the mixing bowl, it doesn't make it right, it doesn't make it wrong. It makes it my truth at this moment in time from my level of understanding and my awareness. And I have tried to challenge it, because, you know, not to put too fine a point on it, I have had a very colourful past. And I won't go into details here, because some of it is quite, I don't know, maybe another time, another place, but some of it is quite unconventional. Legal, but sure. Unconventional. Let's just leave it at that for the time being. So, yeah, I'll come up for air now, Nicole. Any thoughts on what I've said there?
Well, I just love how you're including in your definition of loyalty, because immediately I was like, I wonder what his definition of loyalty is and how that flows between the relationship to self, but also inside the context of relationships with another. And so I love this definition that you've brought in of really honoring what's true for you. Mm. And I think in this way, the body is a barometer for that. We, you know, sometimes we feel resistance, and I think it's important to get curious and ask ourselves, where does that resistance come from? Where does that trigger come from? What is this brushing up against that's creating friction or tension within me? Is there a learning or a growth opportunity here? Or is this just my body as a barometer telling me that, cool, like, great that you do that, I celebrate you, and that's totally not my truth, that's totally not what is aligned for me. And I think there's enough space in this reality for people to have their own diverse set of truths. And I think more than anything, it's important for us to discover what that is for us and to honor that with integrity, loyalty to ourselves, really honoring ourselves with reverence, with truth, even if it's scary, even if it's going to potentially cause family members or the ones who are closest to us to judge us, to outcast us. I mean, I'm not even that unconventional compared to a lot of people in my life. And yet I had a lot of those fears of what are my friends going to think? What's my family going to think if, you know, if I bring home a man and a woman. And I'm like, I'm in a throuple, guys. And like, we're going to raise children together. I have people in my life who are doing that. And ultimately, I've determined that's actually a little bit too far on the spectrum for what is actually true for me. But I do think everything is kind of on a spectrum. And through life's experience, we get to choose. But I guess where the rub or the challenge is for me is in the questioning of ideals, because I think for me, I was really, really indoctrinated, actually is the word that I would use, of almost like borderline brainwashed by Disney. Like, I was really, monogamy is the only way. This is what I want the love story of my life to be. And I'm still a bit of a hopeless romantic with my idea of relationship sort of cracked open and a bit more flexible now, but I used to really not see another way. And it's been a very interesting journey. But yeah, I think it comes down to what's true for you, and then honoring that through whatever means necessary.
And as one that's kind of setting intentions now, so I've been single for 4 years, and I'm setting very strong intentions to attract a sacred relationship, one that's based on the best version of me playing full out for who I am in this human form, and actually the higher form of that as well, and attracting that same spirit, that same soulful union. Yet again, Nicole, it's only from my own experiences that leads me to a place. And I have, as I say, at the risk of repeating, I've spent a lot of time kind of in solitude, and what's emerging here. And that sacred union at the exclusion of all others is absolutely where it's at. And then so I ask myself, but yeah, why? I mean, that's nice. You know, it's clean and it's honourable and, you know, da, 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 and all the kind of judgments that may come from external parties, be that family, friends, or, you know, communities at large. But I just wonder, you know, to have that intimacy and that depth with that special person, to really kind of open up and embrace that vulnerability in all its weird and wonderful forms, and the bond that gives you. You know, for me, that's a strand. That's one of the kind of bricks that build this beautiful building called love. And this construct called love. In fact, construct's not even the right word, but this special thing, this construct. Yeah, I'm kind of clunky with words here, but where I'm not clunky with it is to have that intimacy, that deep trust, that really powerful, you are the front and center of my world above everything, at the exclusion of all others, in that deepest intimacy. And I'm not just talking physical, sexual, I'm talking about the emotional, the spiritual. We get each other. We really get each other, because we've been blessed to be brought together. We've been blessed. And I think when a relationship is at that very, very, very high energetic level, for me, there's no room for any other to dilute that in that really, and I'll use the phrase again, that deepest intimacy, be that physical, be that mental, be that emotional, be that spiritual. But it's that, you know, even at the exclusion of our children, because they are the ones that are going to pick up on our energy and learn the lessons. And that kind of, yet again, for me, takes us back, Nicole, to what we spoke about in the first episodes about, yes, words have power. So we can teach our kids lessons through words. And as the father of three grown-up kids and 4 grandkids, I know that the most powerful lessons I've actually imparted have been by my actions, and not by my words. So I think there's this whole thing about what energy, intentionality are we portraying to our children, but to ourselves, really. That's my own take on it, and I'll say it again. I'm not saying that's right or it's wrong, but I kind of just kind of throw that out there to see how that lands with your own journey of discovery so far.
Yeah, well, it's interesting because I think I used to think that these things were an either or, and now I think it's a both and, or it's a both and neither in a way. And what I mean by that is I used to think that the only way to have that sacred union and have that depth of bond and the trust was inside a monogamous agreement or a monogamous arrangement. Mm. And what I've learned through my exploration and through my journey is that there was actually something about going through the experience with my current partner of opening up the relationship, having to have all of these incredibly difficult conversations. I mean, this was some of the most trying emotional experiences of my life. Like it was devastating. It hurt when jealousy comes up, control issues rise to the surface, right? Like everything inside of you is screaming in rebellion, in a way of like, no, like I just want you. And so I sort of went through that process, was patient, noticed a lot of it, checked in with my own truths along the way. And the experience of that led to a level of trust and bond that I've never experienced yet. So it's interesting. Like I found what you're describing through an unconventional path. And I now trust this person more than anyone because of that experience and because of how I create trust within myself, right? Because I'm loyal to myself and I speak my truth and I share my needs, and we navigate that as consciously as possible through conversation and through action. But it was a real kind of eye-opening experience that ultimately created a lot of safety across us. So it strikes me that I think even though we might have different orientations or different preferences across the two of us, you and I, in like the container of relationship that would feel best for each of us, we still are after the same thing, right? Which is that sacred bond of incredible depth, incredible trust. And it just is interesting to me that I think we can find that through different paths. Mm. And I think polyamory gets a lot of, like, it's kind of a hype thing right now in our culture, where I think people are rebelling against conventional relationships in a lot of ways, but people are also really misusing this. Mm. And they're saying, I am polyamorous, I'm doing conscious non-monogamy, but really it's, they want to have multiple sexual partners. And so it's like, that to me is not necessarily an honest way of going about this. It's like, if that's what you want, just say that. If that's where you're at, celebrate that, be truthful, don't lead people on. So I think it comes down to, again, what works for us and what our preferences are. It's like, I see monogamy and polyamory as being straight or gay, right? Like it's just another orientation in the mix these days of what our identity is and what our intersectionality is. At least that's how I've come to think of it.
Mm. Yeah, it's fascinating because we are... in the most respectful, loving way, we're really polarized on this, really polarized on this. And it's, from my own point of view, I think it's because I've had such wide and consistent, certainly in the past, diverse sexual experiences that I'm kind of at peace with myself now. And I know, and I offer this as a reflection of me, certainly not in any kind of projection or patronizing, I've got it sorted and you haven't because I'm doing it this way. But yeah. There's a lot of stuff that I've got out of my system that's led me to this strong plan. And you've alluded to it, Nicole, you know, albeit different paths, we're kind of heading towards the same thing. But it's just fascinating to hear and the diversity that prevails throughout the world, whether we're talking about, like you say, gay, straight, rich, poor, black, white, you know, the polarization of conditioned labels, because that's what we're talking about here, really, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Any other thoughts around this? Because I think it's such a valid, I mean, you know, not just in its own right, because there isn't a right or wrong in this, obviously. But I think it's a kind of reflection or a relatively microscopic example of the diversity and the choices that we face within our modern day world. And this more acceptance of there is no right, there is no wrong. It's what is my truth. Any other sort of thoughts around this, Nicole?
Yeah, well, I think it's a beautiful place to be in humanity and in culture, that there is availability to discover what's true for you and then to construct a life that is based on that and to find others who resonate with that or who want the same thing. Like, I really believe there's something and there's someone or someones for everyone. And it's also incredible to me how we synchronistically find that and how we can also coexist across massive diversity and still form incredible connections with people who are different from us too. Like, that's equally as important. And I think one thing that I've really kind of been leaning into is whatever relational container is best for you, as far as what's going to make you feel safe, what's going to make you feel the most authentic in terms of who you are, what's going to help you become who you want to be and have the lived experience in this lifetime that you're most wanting to have when it comes to the context of relationship. I think there's probably a construct or a container, if you will, that's going to most serve. So I think about this a lot, where I really believe that we're both products of our context. And that can impact who we become, but we also get to choose that. We also get to choose the context or the containers that we step into and allow those to move us or support us in our growth. And so I've been curious about these different containers, and ultimately I've tried a couple on that weren't right for me, but man, did they teach me something? And I'm glad that I still like got in there and was like, oh no, that's actually not the type of growth, or that's actually not true for me. Like, let me turn all of the very subtle dials and the levers of what my ideal relational agreements are, because there's so much nuance in that, right? It's like I still want long-term commitment. I want to feel like my partner's holding me with respect and reverence. I want deeply clean agreements where there is full transparency, no opacity, no running around and hiding things. I want someone who respects me as the future mother of their children and is going to like really be in on the co-parenting journey with me. And the list goes on, right? Of like what those ideal conditions are for me inside of a relationship. And I think we get to cultivate that through the nuance, but we can't identify the nuance necessarily without really knowing ourselves. And so I celebrate how we might have different views, but we're both really committed to knowing ourselves and then communicating that with whoever we choose to be in partnership. I think that authenticity is everything. That self-awareness is everything when choosing not only partners, but the agreements that surround the partnership, and making sure that that's really dialed and that is really true for anyone involved. I really think it comes down to that.
On a practical level, I don't know if practical is even the right word, but so picture the scenario, if you will, Nicole, where, you know, there's this kind of more open scenario, and obviously, you know, the family unit is key, and maybe this is the kind of, just a thought, but this is the kind of step over now as we open this up into the family in terms of relationships more generally. But my kind of, my thoughts on this one is, like I say, on a practical level, what if other children are bought in to the dynamic through third parties? What kind of, you know, how does that land? And, you know, it's all right saying, well, you know, contraception. Well, as I was taught when I was a kid, the only true contraception is the word no.
Fair, yeah. Yeah. It's, you know, I think you're right. Like these unknowns could still come up. Like you can have all the agreements in place of, you know, if you're with someone else, it's always protected every time, only protected sex. Like, you know, that we are only having children with each other. But of course, like unexpected things can come up. But I think, you know, there's a couple things that come up for me here. I think one, I'm often turning to Indigenous culture as a potential model to teach me something that I, with my Western brain, can't see. And so when we look to Indigenous culture and how children were raised, they were raised by many adults, by several adults, some that were in pair bonds and some that were in like trio or triad bonds, where there was a masculine, a feminine, and then a third individual who was like kind of in between. And this was considered kind of the norm and the more complete package or the more complete picture of a unit in some ways. And so the village would raise the children. The adult that had the skill set that child was showing the most interest in or the most innate ability in would take on some sort of co-parenting or significant mentorship role in the child's life. So I think just generally from looking at that model, I would love a reality where my children have many adults in their lives who genuinely care about them, who help with childcare, who serve as mentors, who really take them under their wings, and that doesn't only fall on my partner and I and put all of that stress to get it right, to be a complete system inside of a nuclear family unit. Like that, to me, that's so much pressure in a way to be everything to one person or to be everything to my nuclear family unit. And it's an ideal that I held for a long time, but it's sort of broken down for me over the years. And so I'm interested in maybe a different way. But I guess the other thing that I often think about is the generation that is coming up right now just completely challenges everything I thought I knew in terms of identity, in terms of beliefs. And so I just see a generation of children who are much more open, much more fluid, who are trying so many things on, from, you know, pronouns to anything under the sun that could fall into intersectionality and like the ways that they would self-identify. So I also want to hold space for the incredible diversity of what my child could want as well, and like not have any of those topics be off limits in a way, and to do some modeling at least of the openness that I have, even if, you know, because even if I am basically open to other relationships, open to, you know, co-parenting with others, I ultimately might still end up in a mostly monogamous relationship for the rest of my life, right? But it's like I'm exploring these things, and my children are invited into some of those conversations to some extent, like in a way that's appropriate and age appropriate and all of this. But I'm excited by the ways the world is changing. I'm excited by how different cultures have done relationship. I'm very interested in the diversity of all of that.
That's, you know, yet again, that's fascinating to hear that approach, because what was going through my mind then, you know, and as one that is an advocate for, you know, World Game Changers is a great advocate for youth. You know, everything that we're doing now, dare I say, as seniors, is to lay that solid foundation to pass that baton on, you know, for future generations, and for the younger people, the younger generations, to pick that baton up and run with it. But for me personally, as the founder of World Game Changers, there's a caveat on that, and that is, you know, would I give the keys to my grandchildren, because my children are all grown up now, but would I give them to my grandchildren to run the business, to run the house, to run? No, I wouldn't. So I think there's this kind of relationship of when the time's right, and yes, fostering open and honest conversations that, as you say, are age appropriate, and context appropriate as well. So I think there's this kind of, I just worry's too strong a word, that society might go too far and let this kind of new wave of youth take over completely. Because the traditional values are there, is, you know, I look at the family unit. Not that I had this, but I grew up around it, because my environment was extremely violent and turbulent. But I had enough people, peers around me, to see what a good family unit is and how priceless and solid it is, and the benefits of stability and you know, and all that kind of thing. And certainty, you know, particularly in psychological development of a child. I never had any of that. So I've kind of grown up learning the hard way, you know, doing all my testing. You know, even now I sort of, you know, in terms of a label or a self-identity, Nicole, I class myself and thought, well, how do you flow, Paul? I swim against the tide. I challenge convention, because, you know, the old model for me, whatever, I mean, what a big general statement that is, the old model. Well, what does that mean, Paul?
Right.
Well, you know, the status quo, if you will. It doesn't work. It doesn't work because there's so many people that are unhappy, poor, dying, ill. You know, that ain't right. We wasn't put on this earth for that. So, you know, I hasten to use the phrase that the world is broken, because I still believe that the world is an absolutely beautiful place and full of beautiful people and beautiful beings, you know, doing the best they can from a place of where they're at that moment in time. And we're all, you know, there's no comparison. We're all kind of figuring it out as we, you know, the aeroplane's been built and it's flying. And I think our role is, well, we're up with 37,000 feet in the air. How do we fly this damn thing? What do we do now?
Totally.
So when I look at this kind of the family unit and the, you know, even using the word tradition, but the benefits it gives, I just worry that this new wave of energy can get a little bit out of hand, and you know, there's going to be this radical approach where youth takes over at the exclusion, and I'm playing a little bit of devil's advocate here, of, dare I say, the tried and tested, because there is a lot, isn't there, Nicole? Well, I ask it as a question, not as a statement, that's very good about the tried and tested, the old system, if you will, for want of a better phrase. As much as there's, you know, it's two sides to a coin.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think with any paradigm shift, you don't want to throw the baby out with the bathwater, so to speak, where it's like, yes, let's take the best parts of that model. Let's not forget what we've learned. We can be such a species of amnesia in this way, and kind of jumping into the next exciting thing. But let's not forget the best parts of this, the parts that are rooted in loyalty, security, safety, trust, belonging, all of this, right? Like, and we create a lot of meaning inside of our families too. Like, it can be a safe space to learn into who we are, to test, you know, the boundaries with our parents before we piss off other people. Like, it's really a testing ground in so many incredible ways. So let's not completely get rid of that or say that that's bad, but let's maybe integrate it with some of the best parts of other models and at least, you know, at least kind of look at the full picture of what's available. And I think just generally, if we look at a patterns level view and kind of get on the balcony with this, I really think we're at a time of integrating seemingly opposite polarities or dualities, where it's almost like we're unlocking a third perspective that isn't either or, this or that. It's both, neither, everything and nothing. It's like, it's such a cool time on the planet to be, you know, having lived in this hyper-masculine work culture for so long, for example, and now we're seeing the rise of feminine leadership in some incredible ways. Do I think that we should swing the pendulum so far that we forget the best parts of masculine work culture? No, definitely not. But I think there's a way to bring the best of both worlds and to really integrate across these seemingly opposite things. And when, yeah, like, I mean, we've done a beautiful job even in this conversation, at least that's how it felt, has felt to me, of we can have different views, but we're also holding this broader perspective that really is just the perspective of love, inclusivity, appreciation for our diversity. And that to me is incredible. Like, that to me is this open receptivity for really grounding things that can heal this quote unquote broken world, if you know, which, as you said, is kind of can be an intense label. But I think this integration of dualistic or polarity energies is really a part of what's happening here. And yeah, and I agree. I don't necessarily want to swing so far the other way that now we're in the best and the worst parts of that model too, because there's a shadow side to everything.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, Nicole, any concluding thoughts then before we bring this second episode to a close? Because I think what we've done actually nicely tethered in the business and work element. You know, I alluded to sort of not handing the keys over to my grandchildren for, you know, business and whatever. So maybe on the same bat time and the same bat channel, we speak about business and work in the context of challenging conventional thinking.
Let's do it. Yeah. Game on. That sounds like a great place to go next. And I've enjoyed, this has been such a thought provoking conversation. And I want to be transparent in the fact that these are things that I'm living into in real time. I certainly haven't mastered any of this. So much of this is new for me. I'm talking to people, I'm asking questions. I'm like, what is that like for you? Oh my gosh, like I could never do that. So it's like, I've got all my own version of that too. And I just really appreciate the opportunity to have these conversations out in the open and just really look at all of it and turn over each stone. It's so part of the process. And so I appreciate the chance to get to process out loud, even on something that, you know, it's important to me, but I certainly haven't mastered. And so I just hope that for anyone, who's maybe questioning these things or, you know, feels really committed to a certain model, that like, that this has offered some value, some invitation to just look at all of, you know, the diversity that exists right now. It's a wild time to be a human.
Yeah. Okay. So let's bring it to a close there then, Nicole. Till the next time, I sign off the way I always do by saying, remember, the world's changing. How will you respond?
Thanks very much for listening to this World Game Changers podcast episode. Hopefully you found it interesting and helpful. Drop a line to paul@worldgamechangers.org with any thoughts or questions you may have, and he'll be more than happy to respond. Remember, the world's changing. How will you respond?